Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, if you ever wondered what one gate in a big airport might be worth to an airline, we have an answer. The president says we should have gyms in airports. Waymo hits 450,000 weekly riders, and U.S. visitors could be subject to social media checks. All those stories and more next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:20, we'll discuss what to do when your fellow seatmate is a person of size and is overflowing into your space. What's the best way to handle a delicate situation?
We'll talk to Steve Ryan of Rudy's Hideaway about his latest bucket list trip, a Grand Prix Formula One race in Brazil. Steve spins a great tale for travelers of all kinds as he takes us to Rio de Janeiro and even shares a little about food delivery services like DoorDash at 11:35.
Our Odds and Ends has wisdom on what to put in the overhead bin on the plane and five national parks to visit in the winter.
An hour full of information to make you a smarter traveler and a better prepared traveler. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere.
Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another live broadcast of the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on Sports Talk. Where? Sacktown Sports 1140. Good to see you. I'm Tom Romano, along with Mark Hoffman. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And I don't know, I think it's I haven't seen the sun in such a long time, Mark. I'm starting to wilt.
You know, we were talking before we went on the air. Flights in the old days, flights would get canceled or have to go to San Francisco. They would be diverted. Yesterday, we were coming in from Denver in the afternoon, no less. And, you know, there's a big screen on the back of your seat that shows you what the altitude of aircraft is. And we're down to we're below 1,000 feet. We still can't see the ground yet. And I'm just sitting there going, wow, what? And literally we got down to about 550 feet and the ground showed up. And when that happens and you're on an airplane, literally that's about 2 or maybe 3 seconds before you hit the runway, assuming that everything has gone the way it's supposed to. And really... what a skill that must be to line up an airplane and to pilot an airplane. I mean, guys on both ends. I've said many times my dad was an air traffic controller, but we didn't have a lot of conversations about that when I was a little kid. But nonetheless, just the ability to do that and be able to land that plane.
You know, when you're becoming a pilot, I learned this a long time ago and saw some clips. When they train you how to fly... you have to learn to fly with instruments only. And literally, they will give you a thing to put over your eyes so that you cannot see out the front of the plane.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like a shade. And then they make you land the plane without ever looking out the window. And I'm sure that those airline pilots have had a lot of practice with that, with their simulators. So it's a whole different skill to be able to navigate and operate a craft like that without being able to see the ground on a regular basis. So I suppose to them, it's like a video game.
I'm thinking,
and they're quite competent in being able to do it. Thank God.
I'm thinking about your previous careers in the radio business. Weren't you a traffic reporter in an airplane at one point in time?
I was the not so famous Chris Clark for something. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, no, I flew for, at the time, it was Metro Traffic, and we flew in circles all around Sacramento, and my job was to call the traffic reports into the radio stations that were a part of our affiliates, and yeah, that was something else. And my pilot was pretty good at doing that sort of stuff.
In the nobody does that anymore department.
No. Yeah. One time in Sacramento, we had 3 planes in the air.
Now everybody's got a traffic reporter in their pocket, and all they have to do is activate it.
Bottom line, you've got all those road sensors now and cameras, so you don't necessarily need one in the sky. However, I think over in the Bay Area and probably down in L.A., they still They still have air watch, if you will, planes that traffic do the traffic reports from the aircraft, wow, helicopters and such.
Wow. So it's not a completely dying breed. I just got back last afternoon from a wonderful trip. We took a group of sports leisure travelers. And for those of you who are listening to the program who don't fit into the, quote, mature traveler category, which is where most of my travelers come from, when you feel like you've sort of been to a lot of places and maybe you have a company that you travel with that you really trust to deliver the goods, you might be willing to pay for a mystery tour. Mm-hmm. And this particular one, I don't remember exactly how much it cost, but several thousands of dollars. We were gone a week. And we went to Virginia. And even some places I had never been to before. I'd never been to Virginia Beach, which is a really big beach. I mean, I've been to Miami, and that's a really big beach. And, of course, Virginia Beach and Norfolk and that area is a very big active military area. And I was telling Tom before we went on the air that when they did the pre-board of the plane at the airport, you know, usually they invite active military on board, and usually there might be one or two people, and there was like 28 of them in Norfolk boarding the plane yesterday morning, which was kind of interesting, but really, really cool, nice people. We had a great time. We saw some amazing Christmas lights, went to some walk-through lights at a garden. We stayed in Richmond at the Jefferson Hotel. If you ever go to Richmond and you have a little bit of extra cash that you don't need, because the Jefferson is not inexpensive. It's going to cost you, I think we paid like $350 a night in the off season. So in the summertime, yeah, great, bring your wallet. But this hotel is a classic, classic old hotel. Really decorated for Christmas to the nines, I mean to the tens. really a spectacular place. Snowed in Richmond while we were there. In Richmond, they have this thing called the tacky Christmas lights. People all over town just go over the top with Christmas lights. We didn't get to go see them because it snowed that night, and we were lucky to be able to get to dinner a half a mile from our hotel. But really a fun trip. Lights on the boardwalk at Virginia Beach, and we went to the place where the ice cream cone, the waffle cone, was invented. Wow. Like 100 years ago, this guy with a chain of restaurant of drive-ins on the East Coast, Dumars. If you're from Virginia or you're from Norfolk, Dumars is a name that you'll know immediately. Really, really cool. If you go there, then that's where you got to go. But they invented the waffle cone hold for ice cream. Yeah. Yeah, really cool place. We had a lot of fun, thanks to all the folks that went along with. And it's always the great thing about taking trips like that is you hope that you maybe will go some places and see some things and learn about some things that you didn't know about before. And that's exactly what happened. And the people who were in that area were just did I already say this? How incredibly nice they were. But they were incredibly nice from the beginning to the end. And when you're traveling, it's always nice to run into nice people because it makes it a lot easier to be nice back, and then it's just a complete love fest. So anyways, on with the show.
Outstanding. Sounds like a great time that was had by all mystery tour goers. All right, we are Mark and Tom at the top of the Travel Guys radio show. We do our best to bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And there is Huey in the news. Mark, what do you got for us today?
Well, I find this is kind of interesting. Of course, I'm an airport and airline geek, so probably not everybody will agree. But Spirit Airlines, which has been desperately trying to, I mean, they check in drawers every morning to see if there's a spare penny that somebody missed. And they've been having some financial struggles. They're still flying. They had four gates at Chicago O'Hare. And with their cutback in flights, I guess they decided they didn't need all four of them. So they decided to transfer two of the airport gates to American. And if you don't know, gates, especially at major airports, maybe not quite so much at Sacramento yet, but at major airports, gates are of incredible value, especially hub airports, because you can run, you know, 6, 7, 8 flights a day through there. It's a lot of money. So Spirit sold or transferred two of their Chicago O'Hare gates to American Airlines for $30 million.
Wow. So it's the the airline leases, if you will, or rents that space from the airport.
Yep.
Unlike a lot of situations, they're allowed to sublet.
With the airport's permission, they are allowed to sublet. So they sublet two of these to American Airlines. I suppose that happens a lot. It's just the first time I've ever seen a price associated with gates at a major airport. So you figure if they're paying $15 million for a gate, they must be making some money, although that flies in the – let me move up a story here I got. There's another one here in our travel news that says – airlines worldwide will realize a cumulative net profit of $39.5 billion this year. So that sounds like a pretty large number. North American Airlines net income will be estimated $10.8 billion, or a profit of $9.50 per passenger. So how $15 million for a gate? And you make $9.50 a passenger. I think it was American who said in the first quarter of this year, if I'm remembering the story correctly, they either made or lost like 20 cents a person. So keep checking those bags, folks, and buying those seats, because that's the only way we're keeping those planes in the sky.
There you go.
The Southwest Airlines CEO says their airline, following up on a story we reported a couple weeks ago, is actively pursuing a network of airport lounges. They have decided that, my business partner, Clayton, belongs to the United Lounge. And if he's only got 35 minutes at an airport, he finds a way to sneak in there and get something. I don't know what he gets. But people who are lounge lizards in airports, some of them are really serious about having that place to go and to stay for a little while. And Southwest is apparently looking at apparently there is money to be made and maybe loyalty to be gained. I'm not sure which, but maybe a little bit of both. The president decided via his transportation secretary, Sean Duffy, that we should have gyms in airports.
When are you going to have time to use it?
Well, that would be the point, but there's another point we'll go into in just a second here. But I don't think on the surface it's a bad idea, because if you've got 2 or 3 or 4 hours in an airport or something like that, and I can think of times when I would have spent 20 or 30 minutes in a gym. But here's the problem. If you have gyms in airports, you're going to have shower facilities in airports, because I have no interest whatsoever in getting onto an airplane next to somebody who just spent 20 minutes lifting weights and activating all of the smelly parts of their body, and now they're getting on the airplane and sitting down next to me. So I'm thinking, Mr. President, the exercise idea is not a bad one on the surface. But to Tom's point, you're going to have to speak to the airlines. We're going to need about another 30, 40 minutes on layovers. That's going to cut out about 2 or 3 cycles a day at the airport. And I'm going to tell you, Mr. President, the airlines aren't going to have any interest in that at all. But we have to do something about the stinkiness impact if we're going to let people exercise in airports. You know, I mean, if we're just going to do a couple toe touches, that's fine. But if we're going to, you know, we're going to lift weights and do chin-ups and all that kind of jazz, that's a different story.
Shoot some hoops. Have a little bit of shoot some hoops before you get on the plane.
You think so? Yeah. But would take a hoop. That's not a bad idea, but that would also take space. Because, you know, you'd have to have space to shoot the hoops, but that wouldn't be a bad idea either. Frontier has first-class seats. They are now slated for an early 2026 debut. There will be 8 seats in the front of the airline, and it'll mark the first true premium seat the budget airline has offered, and a major shift for an airline long known for its no-frills onboard experience. So somebody out there who's listening, when you fly Frontier in first class, if you've flown first class on another carrier, please come back and tell us what it was like. You know, was it a good deal, or was it perhaps maybe not? Hey, let's shift away from airlines here for a couple minutes. Lahaina Harbor is going to reopen. If you are a Hawaiian traveler, you know that the island of Maui a couple of years ago now had about a year and a half ago, had a really, really bad fire. And the town of Lahaina got really hit. And the harbor was, it severely damaged the harbor. And the harbor was basically closed because there was no business there. I mean, everything burned all the way down to the harbor itself. So it's coming back. It has reopened. It's only open in the daytime. They don't have power yet at night, but one small sign that Lahaina is coming back. And for those of you who have been to Lahaina before, we had a group that went there earlier this month. And I asked specifically, you know, how is the banyan tree doing? There's a very famous banyan tree right down by the port, in fact, of Lahaina, that every tour bus in history has always gone by, and there's a story about the banyan tree and stuff in Lahaina, and it got badly damaged in the fire, but it is coming back. It is growing again.
Showing some growth, yeah.
Trees
do that. They'll burn down and then come back.
Yeah, well, this one wasn't quite completely done, and now it's starting to flourish again. That part of Lahaina is still pretty much closed off to visitors, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens there over the next 5, 6, 7 years. The rest of the island, tourism-wise, if you're thinking of going there, is doing just fine. It's just as expensive and overpriced as it's always been. But our folks really enjoyed the Maverick helicopter ride over to Hana. Okay, here's the Waymo story. 450,000 weekly paid rides. They're bragging that they're widening their lead on Tesla. So in April, to give you some comparison, they hit 250 weekly rides. So now they hit 450, roughly, 7 months later, 8 months later. So they're, listen, the day of we talked, this was just a dream in somebody's eye a number of years ago, but now it's reality, and it's probably not going to be too long. There are going to be people listening to this radio station, this show right now, that before too long, I am certain, you're going to be seeing driverless cars on a regular basis. Maybe we will run into each other less. I wonder if you'll be able to make a driverless car or go 85 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone.
Oh, man. No, probably not. That might be the only way to kind of throttle folks down is in driverless cars.
Yeah, it might be an idea. All right, here's a story relating to travelers. The headline is, this is from NBC News, U.S. to mandate checks of some tourist social media history from last 5 years. President Trump has implemented several measures to curb the movement of foreign travelers in recent months. Some tourists will be mandated to provide 5 years of their social media history as part of their applications to visit the U.S. That's kind of interesting. I guess it makes sense. If you do background checks on people, criminal background checks, it seems like you'd want to know what they're talking about and who they're talking to on social media. It's just, I don't know. It seems intrusive and weird to me. Maybe I'm over the line there, but anyways, we'll see. We're sure sending a lot of messages to people who are coming from overseas that this is not a friendly, I mean, with all of the fees, and we want to look at your cell phone, and you know, we've got a lot of World Cup people hypothetically coming here, and those people, they spend a lot of money. So it's PickleCon is returning to Kansas City in 2026.
PickleCon. As in pickleball, right?
That's it. The ultimate pickleball festival. People say, well, why would this be on a travel show? Well, because a lot of people are going to travel to Kansas City for PickleCon. And it's been there before. It has players, clubs, and fans from all across the country. There are competitions. There are how-tos and skill set demonstrations. And there's a vendor village and latest paddles and footwear and apparel and accessories and pickleball technology. And you can try on new gear, and all the representatives are going to be there. This is the new thing.
Sure is. It sure is. Have you played?
I have not. I used to play tennis. Haven't played for a lot of years. Pickleball is kind of a don't have to move as much version as tennis, is kind of the way I look at it.
Well, the nice thing about pickleball is it certainly scans the spectrum of age groups and physical abilities. Mm-hmm. People can play pickleball at pretty much any age because, you know, and you play at the level that you're capable of. As you mentioned, the courts are smaller. I've seen a couple of large places that used to be all tennis, and they have chopped them up and made them into, you know, twice the number of pickleball courts because more people are interested in playing pickleball. Then tennis.
Yeah,
here again,
well,
like I say, less running around. It's a big deal.
Whatever works for you. Listen, if we don't get out of here, you're not going to have time for the commercial break and the Smarter Traveler segment. So that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Merry Christmas from our friends at Rudy's Hideaway Lobster House. Rudy's Hideaway has all your holiday needs covered for the season. In-house banquets and off-site catering available for all your party needs. Plus, this month, they have an offer that will fit the bill for you gift givers. Be an easy win. You can go out to Rudy's, get yourself a fine dinner while you're there. Buy yourself a $100 gift card to give as a gift, and you will get a $20 gift card for yourself. Offer good through December 23rd, so it's a two-for-one kind of deal. Not exactly, but you get the message. $100 gift card gets you a $20 gift card. Giving is truly receiving at Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. Remember now, they have hand-cut steaks, jumbo lobster tails, gift cards for the whole family, and so much more. Greatest food in town since 1970. Highway 50 at Hazel. Mark and Tom, the travel guys, and all friends will see you there. All right, you're stuck in a plane and your passenger is overflowing into your space. How do you delicately deal with it? That's next here on the Travel Guys. Live and in living radio here at Sactown Sports 1140, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Yeah, okay, Mark, this is a sensitive subject.
It
is. Let's see if we can help people out with it.
It is. And you know what? I'm just going to be honest up front. There is no one answer to this. You get on an airplane and you get to your seat and you find that the person next to you is a large person and they're not going to fit completely in the seat. They may not be able to put the armrest down, which legally on an airplane you're allowed to do, is to require that the armrest comes down. If the person can't fit around the armrest, then that kind of sort of is not your problem. So, And what this discussion on One Mile at a Time was about, what do you do when you get on the plane? Let's say you're already in your seat. You're in an aisle seat. Here comes somebody down the aisle. They're going to sit in the middle seat. They're a very large person. They get in. Their body mass overflows into your area, and you're either touching them for the next 1, 2, 3, 7 hours. It's not a comfortable situation, and it's probably not a comfortable situation for the person of size either.
Agreed.
This is not about judgment, but it is about, most airlines, for example, United Airlines has a policy for people of size. So if you're a person of size, you can go to the United Airlines website and you can see what that policy is. Southwest used to have a really lenient policy. That if you bought two seats and then after the flight, they would refund you one. That policy is changing now. They will only refund you the seat if the flight isn't sold out. So it's not quite as user-friendly as it used to be. If you put up the money for two seats, you got on, you had two seats. Now there's plenty of room. Nobody has any issues. They give you a seatbelt extender. Life is good. You get off the plane. You send Southwest a note. They send you back the money for the one seat, and life is good. However, that's not going to be the policy anymore, and no other airline has that policy either. So what you need to do is you need to talk to the flight attendant. And it may perhaps involve you getting up from your seat and going to the flight attendant. And the reality is, looking at this discussion with 200 comments, flight attendants' reactions are very different. Sometimes they will take charge of the situation. If there's another seat on the plane, they may offer to move you. But what if there isn't another seat on the plane? And some flight attendants, according to this 350 comment discussion, aren't always responsive to this. So it is a difficult situation. But in general, the consensus, especially from several flight attendants who chimed in to the conversation, was that it's part of their job to make sure that people are safely seated on the aircraft. So just like they wouldn't let a four-year-old sit in the exit row, they shouldn't let somebody else sit in a place that makes it uncomfortable for someone else who has all – you bought a seat. You bought a very limited space on an airplane. You're sort of entitled to it. So gently, gently. And many people in this, I will tell you, probably 30-40% of them said, hey, if the flight's only an hour long or something, I just suck it up. I mean, because after all, it may not be that person's fault that they're a large person, and I'm not trying to embarrass them or cause a scene or anything like that. There was a lot of feeling like that. I would love to hear from you if this is a subject that you've either run into, if you are a person of size or you're not, and you've run into this, travelguysradio.com, you can leave a comment. We're going to do a mailbag section next week, so I would love to have a few people's feedback in order to be able to share. When you've encountered this situation, how have you responded to it, and what happened after you made your response? Or were you able to work it out with the other person, or how did that all work out? Anyway, it is a very delicate situation, so let's ask the audience and see what their comments are on this, and then I'll report back to you next week during our mailbag section.
All right. Once again, we're Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Thanks for coming along. You can find our mailbag section where you can, or our website where you can leave a comment on the homepage at travelguysradio.com. We're going to be joined by Steve Ryan, proprietor of Rudy's Hideaway. Steve is a kind of a world traveler, likes to go to those Formula One auto races, and he's going to join us here on the program and talk about filling his latest bucket list.
And
that's right here with Mark and Tom. We are wait a minute. We have one more thing to cover before we take the break. Mark?
I was just going to say, Steve, not only obviously is an advertiser in the program, we don't make it a huge thing to put advertisers on, but Steve, because of this bucket list thing, he's a great, I know you're going to enjoy listening to him. And listen, if you're a person who uses DoorDash, Steve is a restaurateur, and at the end of this interview, which we taped a couple days ago, at the end of this interview, Steve talks about DoorDash and how that all works and stuff, and I think you will find that all fascinating. So Grand Prix Auto Racing and DoorDash coming up after the break right here on the Travel Guys.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
If you're a baseball fan, did you know you do not have to fight the traffic, go to all the hassle of getting your own tickets and stuff just to go see a Giants game at Oracle Park in San Francisco? For the last 47 years, Sports Leisure Vacations has been taking folks to Giants baseball games, and our schedule is out for the 2026 season. It starts with an overnight trip to see the Giants and the Yankees play two games, stay in San Francisco for the night. That's at the very end of March. And then the regular season schedule continues for the rest of the year with teams like the Dodgers and the Padres and the like. Some games, believe it or not, this is December. We're not even thinking about baseball. But these were all announced to our Travel Club members a couple weeks ago, and some games are already filling up quite quickly. So if you are a baseball fan and you would like to be able to go see a game in San Francisco without all of the hassle, comfortably on a motor coach, go to sportsleisure.com and you will be able to get a complete schedule of all the games for the season. Don't wait too long. Baseball in San Francisco, sportsleisure.com.
Hey there, it's Mark and Tom. Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now, links to our special guests and so much more, always at travelguysradio.com. Well, it's been a while since we've had our friend and proprietor of Rudy's Hideaway, Steve Ryan, to join us on the program, not necessarily to talk about Rudy's, which probably we'll get around to sooner or later. But Steve is kind of our resident bucket list filler, if you will. We talk a lot about places that would be on people's bucket lists, and time to time we actually run across someone who has bothered to take the time and the effort to fulfill some of his bucket lists. Steve, thanks so much for joining us here on the Travel Guys.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my latest adventure, and what I kind of been doing with my buddy Jamie Williams is we pick a Grand Prix Formula One race destination. They have 24 different stops. Of them are through Europe and, well, it's Asia too. But anyway, we chose Brazil this year, and we left on Halloween. Just had another fabulous time. It was flew into Rio de Janeiro, which I had never been before. Usual situations, missed delays, missed connection, lost luggage.
Oh, my.
Those. Yeah, that's kind of my buddy Jamie travels so much that, you know, he packs a regular bag, but he has a backup in his carry-on of clothes and toiletries just because his luggage gets lost so frequently. I don't know if you talk about that much, but on your show, I catch it when I can. But
we do, Steve. We talk about trying to be prepared and making sure you got that extra toothbrush and underwear. So you're saying that particularly on some of these long stints, he's had a rash of losing his bag, so he brings a backup of everything. Now that you've traveled with him, have you taken on that same kind of style?
No, but I did have to go shopping once we got to Ipanema because I had to buy a set of clothes and so on. My luggage wasn't too bad. It was a day late. His was two. The other thing that I did, because we've gone through this before and it's pretty easy to do, is put an air tag in your luggage. So unless there's a communication issue, if you're in some country and trying to figure out your luggage and, you know, talking to somebody in a foreign language or whatever, but you can tell where your bag is. So you can actually tell them, I see it right here. But anyway, it's a cheap way to kind of call out and, you know, correct people at the airlines when they're searching for your bag.
And in fact, Steve, some of the airlines now openly admit and advertise and will ask you if you have an Apple AirTag in your bag, if you go to the baggage office to report that your bag hasn't arrived in time, and they can now tap into, you know, you're saying, well, here, I'm looking right at my bag, and they're like, no, it's in Minneapolis. And you're saying, no, this is where it is, and here it is right here. Well, now they can access that. So hypothetically, you having Apple tags or some type of similar device in your baggage will help the airlines get your bag to you quicker.
Did you do that, Steve? Did you use the AirTag and tell the airlines where it was?
Yeah, they were getting it right each time we talked to them. But we were, a few years ago, we were in France, and they weren't helpful at all. And we could not, at the time, we didn't have air tags. But anyway, it was hung up in London and for a few days, but we didn't, you know, we were trying to just navigate the phones and so on with the airlines, and it was really tough.
So you went down there for the big race. Did you, can I ask you, did you buy your tickets from a regular ticket outlet, or did you buy them on the secondary market? Did you have to pay a premium for your ticket?
No, we use this group. It's called the F1 Experience. So it's kind of a package, including the hotel, and they're better than grandstand seats. I'm just letting you know that. We were at the start-finish line, you know, kind of looking right down, and it was, of all the tracks that they have, the people we talked around, there's to go to a lot of tracks. They said this was the best viewing. You really get to see a lot of the track. I mean, a huge portion of the track. A lot of times you'll just be sitting in a particular place and you'll just see them come into a turn and then out of the turn, and that's it. But you got to see, like, I would say where we were about 3/4 of the track, and it was beautiful.
That's great. Did you get to rub shoulders with any of the drivers?
Yes, I did. I ended up, I was again with these tickets, you get to like an hour or so through the paddock, and we actually I was within arm's length of Lando Norris, who's the one who's going to probably end up being the champion. He drives McLaren. But, yeah, we got close to him, and I did get my picture taken with another guy named Hulkenberg. He races for the stake racing team. But, yeah, we were kind of right down there with all the drivers after they came off the track.
Did you have some time to enjoy Rio de Janeiro, and did you?
Yeah, we were 2 days prior to that. We always try to get a little lay of the land, just, you know, other than just going to the races. Yeah, Rio de Janeiro, we stayed at on the beach at Ipanema Hotel there, and Copacabana is right around the corner. Amazing natural beauty in Rio de Janeiro. I mean, like Hawaii, Cabo San Lucas, just crazy coastlines, beautiful, but not many American tourists there, and I don't know whether I was really surprised. Rio is a pretty poor country, so I don't think it's frequented as much as other destinations, just because they do have a bit more crime. And but, you know, we didn't have any problems. You know, you need just typical stuff where you keep your hands in your pocket and just be careful. You don't wear a Rolex or anything fancy and jewelry wise. But yeah, we didn't have any problems. But when we were researching it, it was certainly something that we were kind of surprised at how much they talked about the problems they have in Rio. And then from there, we flew over to Argentina to the Iguazu Falls, which are just crazy amazing. It's like Niagara Falls, beautiful, just this huge amount of waterfalls. And we stayed at a place called the Gran Malia, and that was within the park, so you could walk to the falls. Anyway, it was completely beautiful. And took a crazy hike when we were on the property that it was about 3 miles in, and at the trailhead, it talked about watching out for pumas and jaguars. We didn't come across any of those, but yeah, really a good time. And then from there, Argentina, we flew to the races in Sao Paulo, and Sao Paulo is just on a whole different level compared to Rio. Very modern. I didn't realize it till I got there, but it's the third largest city in the world behind, I think Tokyo's one, Mexico City's two, Sao Paulo's three. But yeah, really modern dealerships, nice stores, restaurants, and yeah, just a really beautiful city, really cool.
Well, Steve, do you have any tips for any the Travel Guys listeners to make them a little smarter travelers if they're going to put together something along this order that you would go look back on and say, boy, I'll never do that again, or you know what, we made the right choice in this and that? What do you have for us?
Well, it's like, I don't know, most travel is always, you know, it seems like it's the people you come across, and they're so, you know, usually everybody is just fantastic and just what goes on there. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you've just got to be flexible when you're traveling. I mean, you're going to, you know, have hiccups and, you know, just the different things that kind of, and maybe things that don't quite, you know, fulfill your expectations, but, you know, you just got to roll with it. It's just, you, whatever it is, just, you know, you're getting an opportunity that most people never get. So you can never complain, or I don't think. I try to make the best of everything. So even if there is something, you go, yeah, that's part of the experience. That's part of the fun.
Lots of people have bucket lists. Some of them never get to them for health or monetary or whatever reason. So that's why we're admiring you, because you're sort of attacking yours. Let me shift gears here just for a second and ask you something that's, we've had a couple questions written into the Travel Guys website. DoorDash now is doing room service for many hotels, especially hotels that don't have a restaurant. The hotel is telling you, here, call DoorDash, and here's the menu that you can choose from, and they will deliver it to you. You're a restaurateur. I hear from some other restaurateurs that DoorDash takes a pretty good share of the take, in addition to charging, in many cases, the person who's getting the delivery. Tell us a little bit about how all that works from a restaurateur's point of view, if you would.
Well, we use DoorDash exclusively. There's a couple other ones out there, but they're the big guy on the block. You know, for the most part, yeah, that's all we do is we hike our prices for that. You know, I think it's 30% or somewhere right in that neighborhood. You know, my menu items are expensive. I mean, for the most part. So I just am always reluctant. I don't know how far it ends up going, but, you know, I know it leaves the restaurant great, but it may not be great when it gets to its final destination, especially with DoorDash. But the only thing I notice with DoorDash, I never get a chargeback. So if the customer complains, I'm not the one who absorbs that. It's all on DoorDash. So I never have anybody say, you know, it came in cold or whatever. So from that standpoint, I, you know, they're pretty cool about that as far as, you know, their fees and so on. But again, I'm not the one, you know, and again, it leaves our restaurant fine, but you know, what it gets to its final destination, how it is, it, you know, could be a different situation. And then again, you've spent some real dough. So anyway, I'm always reluctant when, you know, that happens. But again, I guess the only thing I like about that is, again, if you want to pay the 30% on top of my prices and, you know, take your chances on what it looks like when it gets there, then right. Yeah, I,
so what you're saying is that indeed, in some cases, food coming from a restaurant is you're paying above the menu price than if you walked in
right.
The door. You're paying an additional premium and plus whatever DoorDash charges you. And to your point, Steve, and I think Rudy's is a perfect example of this. You serve really good food. It isn't cheap.
Thank you.
Because good food isn't
right.
Cheap. And well, I guess we can make a one asterisk there for an In-N-Out burger. But good food is generally not inexpensive. And so the folks were asking, am I paying a huge premium, or should I just walk down the street to the restaurant two blocks and get it and bring it back to my hotel room? And it sounds like, indeed, that probably the hotels are using that as a bit of a profit center, and that people right. should be, people should at least be aware of. Do you find that the is the DoorDash type customer, is that increasing, decreasing? How is that with your restaurant?
You know, I would say with our restaurant, it's probably, we're not super busy with it, just because I think that DoorDash commercial customer is the In-N-Out burger, the McDonald's, those type of items. I mean, and adding $30 on top of that. So I don't think that we're not getting that many DoorDash orders just because of that. I think it's going to, I think it would be the lower, you know, the quick stuff, you know, because can it? I mean, you do want to spend $100 and, you know, on your couch. I don't know.
I just thought that I thought you are kind of our restaurant source. So I thought with that question, it would be good to go to you. Let me before we wrap up here, where's the next bucket list trip that you, what's next on your list?
You know, I haven't quite got that figured out yet. I mean, I'm looking at a few different races, but I haven't decided on one yet. I've certainly, when you go to these different races, there's people, and I had one guy, and he'd been to all of them. I mean, he had just been to every race. I mean, he was a big Formula One fan. So anyway, I was picking his brain about the best destinations and so on. And I haven't quite, I definitely got some recommendations, but I haven't quite decided yet, but I will have another one next year. The other thing I forgot to mention is just how popular this Formula One, especially on race day, there was 304,000 people there for that race on Sunday.
Wow.
I kind of look back in the past and think, you know, the largest crowd I've ever been in. And you think about the Niners, you know, maybe 60,000 or whatever. But anyway, I was in a crowd of 304,000 people.
Wow.
So,
wow.
That's
it's hard enough to get out of the garage. If you go to the Kings game, I can't even imagine 304,000 people, how that would work out. Steve, thank you so much for your support of the Travel Guys. Tom and I are huge fans. I was a huge, as I've told you this before, Rudy was a sports leisure traveler. Yeah, we had the opportunity to get to know him a little bit. And so that was, it's very cool that you are still a part of things. So take care, and we will talk to you next time.
You betcha. Thank you.
Always fun to sit down with Steve and have him talk about his bucket list trips. 304,000. Who are those four people there? That would just that's really fine tuning your numbers for a crowd, wouldn't you say?
Steve has a great way of telling the story. I don't know what it is, if it's his voice or what it is, but he has a great way of, he's a good storyteller. And, you know, not everybody can afford to go off and do a Grand Prix Formula One race in Brazil, but it's nice to have somebody who can and can come back and tell us about it in a way that makes it exciting and entertaining, not only the race, but the destination itself. And I really thank him for taking that sidebar with me with the DoorDash thing, because not everybody knows that in addition to the delivery fee, you know, whoever's paying that, the restaurant, the customer, whomever, but that in some cases, there is some pretty sizable markup going on behind the scenes on that food. So you might just want to compare the DoorDash prices to the menu prices, you know, before you go crazy the next time, because you may be paying a premium that you didn't know. And to his point, you know, why would you? I mean, most people wouldn't order a meal from a really great restaurant and have it delivered to their home knowing that, you know, it might not be the same meal. But then again, if you couldn't get out and you really like the food there.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus the clam chowder from Rudy's would travel almost anywhere. That's what I would say. All right, I'll shut up here. We go on.
All right, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. One more segment to go. We're going to, in our odds and ends segment, we're going to talk about the wisdom behind what it is that you want to put in the overhead bin on a plane. Make you a smarter traveler. That's next, right here with the Travel Guys. Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, breaking news. American Airlines looking at free Wi-Fi with the details. Mark?
Yeah, starting next month, free Wi-Fi. American Airlines will have free Wi-Fi connectivity on more planes than any other domestic carrier. Viasat and Intelsat, high-speed satellite connectivity. So if you are an American Airlines traveler, free Wi-Fi is coming. I used the Wi-Fi in United Airlines yesterday for the first time, you know, tried to use it like for several hours to work. And it worked perfectly. So
good.
Yeah, not everybody reports that all the time. It's a little catch as catch can in the air. United, however, is still charging $10 for Wi-Fi, and I've flown a lot of miles and paid them a lot of money over the years, and I think Wi-Fi should be free. So I believe that's what's going to happen when they get it rolled out on all of their planes, which is going to be a little bit behind American by a few months. Hey, Travel and Leisure magazine asked writers asked and readers some of the best national parks to visit in the winter, and I thought their choices were kind of interesting. The Bryce Canyon National Park, these kind of divide into places to go in the winter where it's winterish and places to go in the winter where it's not winterish, if that makes sense, weather-wise.
Sure,
Bryce Canyon
sure.
in Utah, if you like national parks, you absolutely have to go to Bryce Canyon at some time in your lifetime. It is one of the most amazing places I have ever been in my whole life. It's been probably 30 or 40 years since I've been there. And before I leave this planet, I plan to go back there at least once more to see it, because Bryce Canyon is just amazing. Glacier National Park, further up north, but it's they close the roads. So the outside area around the park and stuff is about all that you can see in the winter. Some warm weather places, Death Valley, right here in California. Great, great, great place. I mean, you would think with a name like Death Valley, which goes back to some wagon trains that didn't quite make it all the way through a long, long, long time ago. But it's an amazing place. You would say, well, it's stark and barren and all this stuff. But if you like the desert, there is no better place. Everglades National Park in Florida, where the alligators live. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of corny and kind of commercial. You can take a boat ride out to meet the alligators, but you do get to see alligators. And
okay.
they're done in a way that is fairly tasteful and good for the environment. So
excellent. You go out on one of those airboats, right?
Yeah, you betcha.
Kind of thing.
You betcha. If you go to Grand Canyon during the winter and you happen to catch snow, then it's beautiful. Otherwise, it's cold. One in Southern California that I'm taking a group to Palm Springs next week. We're not going to this park this time, but we did a couple years ago. Joshua Tree National Park, which has those really interesting trees out in the desert, is really a great place to visit in Palm Springs. But the number one national park for the wintertime, all of the experts pretty much agree. We take folks there every other year in the wintertime, Yellowstone. Got to go to, because all of those thermal features and the animals, of course, are roaming around in the wintertime, and someplace that you can go and really get back to nature. Yellowstone National Park in the winter.
Don't try to pet the animals.
No. It's been a while since we talked about that. But yes, don't try. They're wild animals, and they're a lot bigger than you, and they're mean and nasty. All right, we have a couple minutes here to talk about overheads on airplanes. I've noticed that this has become a more contentious fact. I listened to a couple people get into an argument the other day on a plane because one guy said, you can't put that bag there. That's over my seat. And he was right behind the guy putting the bag up. And he's like, that's my space. And it was the last space in that immediate area. And the guy said, sir, I'm sorry, but the overhead space doesn't belong to anybody. I'm putting my bag here. I'm sitting a row back. And so there was some words exchanged until the flight attendant came and said, indeed, overhead space doesn't belong to anybody. You like to use the space over your head, but use wherever you can. And so I've noticed lately that some people are still putting like jackets and little bags and stuff up there. Best strategy. The flight attendant's going to come by on a really full aircraft, and she's going to ask, who is this stuff? And they're going to hand it to you. So you want to be a controller of your own destiny. So find a place for it under your seat. If it's something small, if it's going to wipe out all of your leg room, why, then you got to put it up there. But some things can go on top of other things, like jackets and stuff like that in the wintertime. So be aware of that. You don't have to take up half of a bin with your jacket. Plus, you'll get along with other the people that you're flying with a little bit better that way. So just be aware of the whole overhead thing. I get it. The airlines have just crushed us with space. So maybe it's if you've got an extra carry-on with you, you something that you want to put on the floor, get an extra legroom seat that helps you. Also, once the plane takes off, you can slide that back and put it underneath your legs. Anyway, just some thoughts but be careful about putting little things in the overhead, because as every airline now charges for checked baggage, it's going to be tougher and tougher they're going to be begging people to take their carry-ons, get it through security, take it to the gate, check it there, still save the money.
All right, my friends, we'll be back next week. It'll be mailbag time to answer your questions here on the air.
You betcha. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching. Have a great week, my friends, and we'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock.
Stay well, my friends. We're the Travel Guys. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 a.m.